From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Early this morning, two Duke lacrosse players, Reed Seligman and Colin Finnerty, were arrested and charged with first-degree forcible rape, first-degree sexual offense, and kidnapping. The charges stem from an incident at a Duke lacrosse team party on the night of March 13th. An African-American woman and student at NC Central was hired by members of the lacrosse team as an exotic dancer, and she alleges she was raped. Test results show no DNA from any of the 46 players tested matched DNA from the alleged victim. Defense attorney Bill Thomas, who represents some of the other lacrosse players but not either of the two arrested, had this to say outside the courthouse this morning.
The two that they indicted had no contact with this woman whatsoever. We are shocked, absolutely shocked. We always thought she would pick out someone who at least had a conversation with her or paid her. This is outrageous, absolutely outrageous.
Are you concerned that...
Little over an hour ago, one of the defendants, Colin Finnerty, made an appearance at Durham County Superior Court. Reed Seligman posted bond and waived his appearance in court. North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC's Leonita Inge was there, and I asked her what happened.
Well, not too long ago, the two attorneys representing the two lacrosse players who have been indicted were in court. There was one lacrosse player in court this morning with his attorney. The other young man was not present. And afterwards, you know, it was just a reading of the charges, I'm told. And then everybody, as they say, split. You know, they rushed from the courthouse out of, you know, two different doors. And one of the attorneys did mention briefly that, you know, these were honorable kids and they're absolutely innocent. And that's the last that they said before leaving the courthouse today.
And while one was in court, the other was not, both have in effect pleaded not guilty.
Right. That's correct.
Leonita, describe the scene for us around the courthouse. I expect there's a lot of media attention there.
Yes, there is a lot of media, media circus, as a lot of people would call it, you know, media from Durham, the state, and the nation, and everyone just staked out front, hoping for a comment, especially from the district attorney, Mike Nifong, who has spoke very little since these indictments have been brought down.
And he didn't say anything today?
Nope, he hasn't said anything public today. He has not come outside the building. But it doesn't mean that he won't, especially because these initial appearances have been made, bail set, and it looks like the case is moving forward.
All right, Leonita, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Leonita Inge is a reporter at North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. The two arrests are the latest in the legal developments in the case. The indictments of the two men, Reed Seligman and Colin Finnerty, came yesterday. They were sealed. We've asked two local law professors, Irving Joyner from NC Central and Richard Myers at UNC Chapel Hill, to join us now to help us understand some of the legal complexities in this case. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
First of all, sealed indictments. We've heard from some that it's a rare event, others that it's fairly common. Which is it, Richard Myers?
It's fairly common to have an indictment sealed in a case where you are afraid that someone might flee or there might be an officer safety issue involved in making an arrest. So this is not significant in that way.
Irving Joyner, what do you make of this sealed
indictment? Well, I agree. Typically, though, it's not handled in this manner. Usually people are arrested long before there is an indictment, but in a case like this, where the investigation was necessary to identify apparently the perpetrators, then you know it's not unusual in the sense, but it's pretty rare.
So, are you saying that you can tell anything about the case that Mike Nifong might have by the way it's been handled so far? The fact that there hadn't been arrests before now suggests anything about the evidence he might or might not have in this case?
I don't think so. No, that has nothing. The procedure that they've employed here has nothing to do with the credibility or weight of the evidence that they have. The only thing that I think that it signifies is that it took some additional time to complete the investigation to put all of the pieces in place to go before a grand jury.
All right. And Richard Myers, why do you think we talked about a fear of flight as one of the reasons that a DA might ask for a sealed indictment? But was that the case here? Why do you think Mike Nifong had those indictments sealed?
Well, I think it would require real speculation at this point. A judge can seal an indictment on his own order as well, and without further inside information, it's simply hard to tell. There could be any number of reasons.
We've heard conflicting reports about the details that night of March 13th, police reports, defense attorneys. In what you've seen reported about the case, can you make any determination about the strength of this case against the two men who have been indicted, Richard Myers?
Well, I think the hope early on was that the DNA evidence was going to come in and that there would be an opportunity to have a match one way or another. That is, you would either have information that would corroborate the witnesses' statements or that would exonerate the players. Having left that, now we're into cases that happen all the time, which are eyewitness-based cases. And this one is going to have the additional problems with the number of witnesses on each side and the possibility of intoxication.
Irving Joyner?
Well, I would agree. There is obviously a claim here that there was a date rape drug used, and that's going to be something that I think is going to play in this thing. But you can't really tell just how strong the case is, and I'm sure that the police department is continuing to investigate, and what the case looks like now might not be what it will look like in at the time that they go to trial.
Now, early on, we heard that there were three alleged three men who committed the crime. Two have been indicted. What do we make of that?
Well, from my angle, nothing other than the fact that they have not identified that person, or they've not been able yet to present an identity to the grand jury to get an indictment.
I would agree with that. It's also one possibility, and again, this is based on speculation, is that someone may be cooperating, and if they're cooperating, you may choose to go forward not on an indictment but on an information. It's just impossible to tell at this point. So the fact that the third person has not been indicted is not dispositive in any direction.
What do you make of there has not been testimony, but we finally heard through the media from the second dancer who was there. She's been quoted in various media accounts as saying she didn't really witness a rape, nor was she told about that, but that certainly the condition of the alleged victim had changed, that she went in sober and in complete control and left in the condition described by the security guard, I think, who found them in the parking lot. What impact do you think that's going to have on this case?
Well, I think that's going to be something that the prosecutor is going to have to deal with. That particular piece of evidence might be consistent with a rape. Date rape drug being administered, or some other drug, but I think that there will be medical reports that ought to identify what was in her system at or around the time that she was examined, and so there should be some data from those investigations that will be dispositive of that issue.
Richard Myers?
I would just agree. I think that's exactly right. We need to wait and find out what the intoxicant, if there was an intoxicant, turns out to be.
Do you think there will be any effort to get the venue changed in this case?
I don't think so. There's not been, I think, the kind of, we just finished the Michael Peterson case, and there was not a change of venue there, and I don't think that the publicity thus far in this matter has exceeded that that surrounded the Peterson matter. So I really don't see a basis for a change of venue, although a judge in his or her discretion might want to move it out to another jurisdiction.
What do you think, Richard Myers?
Well, I would think it would be irresponsible of the attorneys not to at least move for it, given the degree of pretrial publicity, the constant community activity. Whether or not it's successful is an entirely different question, but I think we can anticipate the attorneys actually moving for one.
The next court date is set for May 15th. What happens then?
That's the arraignment, and I believe that at that point the attorneys will come in with some pretrial motions. Basically, in Durham County, there are, I believe, three or four settings in which you just basically kind of deal with pretrial discovery issues and motions to get the case ready to go on the trial calendar. It may be that there will be some plea negotiations that will be completed at some point, but by May 15th, I think we'll be further along in looking at and examining the evidence that are available to all of the parties.
And what's next for the two men who have been arrested, Reed Seligman and Colin Finnerty?
Well, I think they, once they get out of jail, need to go on with their lives and work with their attorneys to help to put together their respective cases. It's a very taxing time for them, and certainly, you know, young people, the uncertainty of what's going to happen. And but I think if they stay busy working with their attorneys, the time will move along pretty quickly.
Richard Myers, any way to tell whether this will be a long trial?
No. at this point, it doesn't sound like we're dealing with an incredibly complex case. The possibility that some expert testimony may come into play, depending on some of the issues we've already discussed, might extend the trial, but it doesn't sound like this will be one where we have multiple events over a significant period of time, so it should be fairly short.
All right. Well, thanks to you, Richard Myers, Assistant Professor of Law at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill Law School. Thanks, Richard.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Irving Joyner is a Professor of Law at North Carolina Central University School of Law. Thank you, Irving Joyner. Just ahead, retooling the American military's approach to insurgencies. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.